For a priest, it's usually not too hard to figure out what to wear in the morning. It's what shade of black will it be today, Lord? But only twice a year do the deacon and I have the opportunity to dress like this. It happens on the third Sunday of Advent and the fourth Sunday of Lent. The third Sunday of Advent, called Gaudete Sunday, the Latin word for joyful. This is Laetare Sunday, the Latin word for rejoice. We just heard that word when the father says to his son, "We must celebrate and rejoice, because the one who is lost has been found, the one who is dead has been brought back to life." We can understand why we might feel joyful towards the end of Advent, because it's almost Christmas and we're going to receive lots of stuff. But what is there to rejoice about in the fourth Sunday of Lent as opposed to the third Sunday or the fifth Sunday or tomorrow or yesterday? Well, in the church's tradition, this means we're past the halfway point, and Lent isn't a lot of fun for a lot of people. It's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in there when we have to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow Jesus on the lonesome road to Calvary. Those crosses are many, they are heavy, the way is far and unclear and full of obstacles and hurdles. And after all this time of prayer, penance, fasting, almsgiving, service, sacrifice, and self-denial, some are growing weary, some can't wait for it to be over. And when we find ourselves at the fourth Sunday of Lent, we find ourselves past the halfway point. We see the light at the end of the tunnel. We know that it's about to give way to Easter glory. And so whatever sacrifices we made are about to be fulfilled and then some. Therein we find some cause for rejoicing. And yet the scriptures for this Laetare Sunday, this fourth Sunday of Lent, tell us that rejoicing comes through reconciliation. We see that on all three readings. In the first reading from Joshua, we see the first Passover in the Promised Land after the Exodus. The Exodus, of course, recalled the night when the Israelites in Egypt painted the lamb's blood on their doorposts, and the Lord passed over their houses, but struck down the firstborn children of all the Egyptians. It was the last and worst plague, and it had Pharaoh driving Moses and the Hebrews out of his land. And thus began a 40-year journey through the desert. Each year during that exodus in the desert, the Israelites would celebrate the Passover. But this is the first time they're able to do so in their new home. And it shows a transition. Up until this point, they had to depend on God for manna from heaven every day. And now they're able to make their own Passover feast with the fruits of their own harvest. But the same God who gave them the manna makes this harvest possible, because from him comes the seed, the soil, the irrigation, the light from above, the farmer, the field, you name it. That Passover was always a remembrance of how much we depend on God for daily bread and for everything else. But it's the first line of this brief reading that's the most important one, when God tells Joshua, "I remove my reproach from you. The punishment is over." What punishment is that? Well, the whole time they were out there in the desert, where they were brought there because God had heard and answered their prayer, Israel was sinning against God. When the first commandment was being carved in the stone tablet, they were breaking that very commandment at the foot of Sinai, when they were melting down the gold that had been given them by the Egyptians so they could worship a golden calf. But God didn't remove his covenant from them. He simply reconciled and renewed it. All throughout those 40 years, they continued to complain. Are we there yet? It's too hot out here during the day. It's too cold out here at night. We're tired of eating this manna. Complaining against God isn't trusting in the Lord. And yet at every twist and turn, the Lord, rather than strike them from the face of the earth, simply reconciled them to himself, encouraged them to be reconciled with each other, and prepared them for the coming of his son, who brought about reconciliation for every sin of every sinner on the cross. It is that one gift of God's mercy in Christ that enables St. Paul in chapter 5 of his second letter to the Corinthians, today's second reading, to say that God has reconciled us to himself through Christ, that in Christ all things are made new. We are to take away the old things and put on the new things. That is the love and mercy of God for us in Christ Jesus, that as he goes to such great lengths to reconcile himself with us, he encourages us to be reconciled with each other. And that is the context for the story of the prodigal son. And that parable makes a lot more sense when we consider very carefully who is listening to Jesus tell this story. On the one side, we have the sinners and the tax collectors. Those who, like the prodigal son, have no hope. They brought a lot of their pain and suffering on themselves. And they're looking for anyone to love them, someone to save them. And of course, the Pharisees in the other camp are looking down their noses at Jesus and at the sinners and the tax collectors. They don't like the fact that he associates with them. These Pharisees are like the older brother in the story, because they don't like it when other people are shown mercy. They don't like it when other people are shown love, and they have no love for other people because they only love themselves. It's called arrogance, self-righteousness. But in the middle of all of that, in the middle of these two camps, in between those two brothers, the prodigal and the elder, we have the mercy of the Father. Now, to redraw the lines of the story, the young son wants his inheritance. As you well know, you can only get an inheritance if the person that holds those possessions dies. And so he goes to his father and says, I like you, but I love your money more. I wish you would just get out of the way and give me what I have coming to me. That hurts the father's feelings, but he loves his son so much that even though he knows the son is going to waste all of these treasures, he gives it to him anyway. And sure enough and soon enough, the son has burned through all of it. And it just says a life of dissipation. Insert sin here. We don't know exactly what he was up to, but it was pretty bad. And it brought him lower than low until the point where he has placed himself in a pig pen. He's surrounded by pigs, and he's jealous of the pigs because they eat better than he does. It takes him a long time before he's willing to admit that it's time to go home with his tail between his legs. And so he begins to rehearse his speech. He believes he's going to have to beg for his father's forgiveness. And when he finally does go back, he never gets a chance to finish that speech. Not because the father refused to see him. Not because the father sent him away or slapped him with the back of his hand. It's because he was smothered in the father's loving and forgiving embrace. The father wants him to know that the one who is lost has been found, the one who is dead has been brought back to life, and that's why he wants to kill the fattened calf, put a robe on him, sandals on his feet, a ring on his finger. And then the best verse of chapter 15 of Luke, verse 29, where it says, and then the celebration began. Once they were reconciled, then they were celebrating. And that's why we call the sacrament the celebration of the sacrament of reconciliation. Because when we go to confession and humbly admit our faults and failings before God, removing the barriers that stand between him and us, he closes the gap with his love and with his mercy, with his light and the promise of new life. He's a God of new beginnings and second chances. Well, this is all great, and the celebration's going gangbusters until the older brother comes back and he sees all this merrymaking and he says, what's in it for me? What about me? When are you going to give something to me? And one thing that really stands out here is the love that the father has for both of his children. Willing to reconcile with the one, willing to forgive the other for being mad at him for forgiving his brother. And at times, we have found ourselves in the role of both sons, doing everything wrong. We know it's wrong, and we do it anyway. But on the other hand, also being upset with God or others if they seem to be forgiving people we don't want forgiven. We don't want to forgive those against whom we'd rather hold a grudge or some resentment. But the Father teaches us a thing or two about love and mercy. As God has forgiven us, forgive others. As God reconciles with us, reconcile with others. And that is the cause of true rejoicing for us in our Christian life, to know that ours is still a God of second chances and new beginnings, that is always finding new and different ways to prepare us that one day we might be with him at his heavenly banquet. And so, as Lent continues, soon to give way to Holy Week, we need to continue to deny ourselves and take up our crosses. But of all the things we lay down, let it not just be sweets and desserts and cuss words. Let it also be those grudges and resentments, so that we might truly be reconciled with God and with each other.